Okay, reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 11th canto, chapter 1. Chapter is entitled The Curse Upon the Yadu Dynasty. And today we have texts 6 and 7. Samartya Loka Lavanya. Nirmuktya Lochanam Minam. Yudhistha smaratam chittam padaishtam ikshatam kriya ichidya kirtam sulokam itatya yajasat nuko Namo Naya Tarishantiti.
Namo Naya Tarishantiti.
Agat Swam Padamishvara.
Agat Swam Padamishvara.
Swamutya Lokalabhanya.
Swamutya Lokalabhanya.
Nirmuktya Lochanam Minam.
Nirmuktya Lochanam Minam.
Yudhistha Smaratam Chittam. Adaishtan ikshatam kriya.
Adaishtan ikshatam kriya.
Achidya kritam su shlokam.
Achidya kritam su shlokam.
Itatya yajasa nunko.
Itatya yajasa nunko.
Tamonaya tarishyantiti. Agat Swam Padamishvaraha.
Agat Swam Padamishvaraha.
Pamukya Loka Lavanya. Samutya Loka Lavanya. Yudhistha smaratam chittam. Padaishtha ikshatam kriya. Achidya kirtim su shlokam. Itatya yajasam nuko. Tamonaya tarishyantiti. Yudhistha smaratam chittam. Adaishtha nikshatam kriya. Achidya kirtam su shlokam. Itatya yajasa nuko. Tamonaya tarishyantiti. Agatsvam Padamishvaraha. Vaishnavis?
Samartya
Loka Lavanya.
Nirmuktya
Lochanam Minam.
Yudhistha
Smaratam Chittam.
Padaishtha Nikshatam Kriya.
Achidya kirtim su shlokam. Agatsun Padamishvara Svamurtya. By his own form. Loka. Of all the material worlds. Avanya. The beauty. Vimukya. Which takes away. Lochanam. He attracted the eyes. Ninam. Of men. Kirbi.
By his words.
Tasmaratam. Of those who remembered them. Chitam. The mind. Padai.
By his feet.
Tanikshatam. Of those who saw them. Kriya. The physical activities. Walking, etc. Achidya. Having attracted. Kirtim. His glories. Sushalokam.
Praised by the best verses.
Vitatya. Having spread.
He
certainly.
Ajasa.
Easily.
No.
Indeed.
Ko.
Upon the earth. Tama.
Ignorance.
Anaya.
By those.
Glories.
Rishanti.
People will cross over. Iti.
Thus thinking.
Agat.
He obtained.
Svampadam.
His own desired position.
Ishvara.
The Lord.
Translation and purport by the followers of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, is the reservoir of all beauty. All beautiful things emanate from Him, and His personal form is so attractive that it steals the eyes away from all other objects, which then seem devoid of beauty in comparison to Him. When Lord Krishna was on the earth, He attracted the eyes of all people. When Krishna spoke, His words attracted the minds of all who remembered them. By seeing the footsteps of Lord Krishna, people became attracted to Him. And thus, they wanted to offer their bodily activities to the Lord as His followers. In this way, Krishna very easily spread His glories, which are sung throughout the world by the most sublime and essential Vedic verses. Lord Krishna considered that simply by hearing and chanting those glories, conditioned souls born in the future would cross over the darkness of ignorance. Being satisfied with this arrangement, He left for His desired destination. Report. According to Sridhar Swami, these two verses indicate that Lord Krishna, having achieved all the purposes for which He had descended, went back to His spiritual kingdom. It is natural that people in the material world hanker to see a beautiful object. In materialistic life, however, our consciousness is polluted by the influence of the three modes of material nature, and therefore we hanker for material objects of beauty and pleasure. The materialistic process of sense gratification is imperfect because the laws of material nature will not allow us to be happy or satisfied in materialistic life. The living entity is constitutionally an eternal servant of God and is meant to appreciate the infinite beauty and pleasure of the Supreme Lord. Lord Krishna is the absolute truth and the reservoir of all beauty and pleasure. By serving Krishna, we can also share in His ocean of beauty and pleasure, and thus our desire to see beautiful things and enjoy life will be fully satisfied. Example is given that the hand cannot enjoy food independently, but can assimilate it indirectly by giving it to the stomach. Similarly, by serving Lord Krishna, the living entity, who is part and parcel of the Lord, will derive unlimited happiness. The inconceivable Supreme Lord, Sri Krishna, by displaying his own true form, freed the living entities from falsely seeking forms of beauty other than his form, which is itself the source of all beautiful things. Simply by seeing his lotus feet, fortunate living entities could distinguish between the ungodly endeavors of the karmis, who seek gross enjoyment for their own sense gratification, and the practice of dovetailing one's activities with the service of the Lord. Although philosophers perpetually speculate about the nature of God, when Krishna directly liberated the jiva souls from all speculative understandings about him by displaying his actual transcendental form and activities. Superficially, Krishna's personal form, words, and activities resemble those of ordinary conditioned souls. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur explains that this apparent resemblance between the Lord's activities and those of the living entities is a merciful concession by the Lord so that the conditioned souls will be attracted to him and become eligible to return to his kingdom for an eternal life of bliss and knowledge. By showing his own spiritual form and kingdom to the living entities in a tangible way for them, Lord Krishna drove away their false enjoying attitude and removed their long-standing indifference to his personality. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, if one can understand the position of Sri Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one will never fall into the network of material illusion. Such a fall down can be avoided if one constantly hears about the unique transcendental form and beauty of the Lord from authorized Vedic literatures. As explained in Bhagavad Gita 2:42 and 43, Yami mam krishnitam vacham pravattam kya vipashtita veda vararata karta nanyad astiti vadinam kamatmana swargapara janma karma phala pradam Kriya Vishesha Bahulam Bhogaishvagatim Prati. Men of small knowledge are very much attracted to the flowery words of the Vedas, which recommend various fruitive activities for elevation to heavenly planets, resultant good birth, power, and so on. Being desirous of sense gratification and opulent life, they say there's nothing more than this. On the other hand, certain parts of Vedic literature are specifically meant to award material sense gratification to the conditioned soul and at the same time gradually condition him to obey the Vedic injunctions. The portions of the Vedas that recommend fruitive activities for regulated sense gratification are themselves dangerous because the living being who engages in such activities become easily entangled in the material enjoyment offered and neglects the ultimate purpose of the Vedas. The ultimate purpose of Vedic literature is to bring the living entity back to his original consciousness in which he acts as an eternal servant of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. By rendering service to the Lord, the living entity can enjoy unlimited spiritual bliss in the association of the Lord in his own kingdom. Thus, one who seriously desires to advance in Krishna consciousness should specifically hear the Vedic literature that deals with devotional service to the Lord. One should hear from those who are highly advanced in Krishna consciousness and avoid interpretations that stimulate materialistic desires for enjoyment. When the tiny living entity is finally able to see the difference between the temporary affairs of this world and the transcendental activities of Lord Trivikram, Krishna, he devotes himself to the Lord and removes from his heart the dark covering of matter, no longer desiring sense gratification, which is enjoyed under the two headings, sin and piety. In other words, although people within this world are considered sinful or pious on the material platform, both sin and piety are performed for one's personal gratification. If one can understand that his real happiness lies in giving pleasure to Krishna, or Krishna takes such a fortunate living entity back to his own abode, which is called Goloka Vrindavan. According to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the Lord first gives his sincere soul the opportunity to hear about his pastimes. When the Lord has advanced in his spontaneous attraction to such narration, the Lord gives him the opportunity to take part in his spiritual pastimes as they appear within this world. By taking part in the pastimes of the Lord within a particular universe, the living being becomes completely detached from the material world, and ultimately the Lord brings him to his personal abode in the spiritual sky. Foolish people cannot understand this substantial benefit offered by the Lord. But Lord Krishna acts for the benefit of such foolish people by saving them from their absorption in the temporary world of false enjoyment. The Lord does this by personally displaying his own superlative transcendental beauty, transcendental words, and transcendental activities. Srila Jiva Goswami has pointed out that the words Tamo Naya Tarishyanti indicate that although Lord Krishna appeared 5,000 years ago, when we hear us in chants about the activities, form, and words of the Lord, we'll get exactly the same benefit as those who personally experience these things as contemporaries of Lord Krishna. In other words, he will cross over the darkness of material existence and achieve the Lord's abode. Thus, Srila Jiva Goswami concludes that if such an exalted destination is available to all beings, it must certainly have been awarded to the Yadavas, who are personal associates of the Lord. It is stated in this verse that by his beauty, Krishna stole away the vision of people who saw him. Krishna's speaking was so attractive that those who heard him became speechless. Since generally those who cannot speak are also deaf, the Lord's words also stole away the ears of those who heard him, since they were no longer interested in hearing sounds other than the Lord's speaking. By displaying the beauty of his footsteps, Krishna stole away from those who saw them the power to perform materialistic activities. Thus, by his appearance in this world, Krishna took away the senses of mankind. In other words, he made people blind, dumb, deaf, mad, and otherwise invalid. Quite an interesting passage here. Therefore, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, since he took away everything people possessed, who would properly call him merciful? Rather, he's just a thief. In this way, he indirectly offers the highest praise to the beauty of the Lord. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur also points out that although Krishna gave liberation to the demons by destroying them, to those who were attracted to him, Krishna gave pure love of God and drowned them in the ocean of his own beauty. Thus, Krishna is not like a person who gives charity without discrimination. And Krishna is so merciful that not only did he give the highest benediction to the inhabitants of the earth, but he empowered great saintly persons, such as Vyasadeva, to describe the pastimes with beautiful poetic verses. Thus, people born on the earth in the future could easily cross the ocean of birth and death by those glories which are compared to a strong boat. In fact, those of us who are now enjoying the glories of Krishna through the transparent medium of the Bhaktivedanta purports, the Srimad Bhagavatam, by the mercy of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, are the fortunate recipients of the mercy of Krishna, who is merciful even to persons yet to be born. This is an extremely long purport, so I'm going to stop here and make some comments. In the last couple of classes by Madame Mohan and Shesha Prabhu, we heard about the thinking and feeling of the Lord. And today also this continues. But what I'd like to address now is the thinking or the feeling of a devotee so that he'll actually experience what is described in the purport, where his vision is stolen away by the beauty of Krishna. And, kind of to summarize it, he made people blind, dumb, deaf, mad, and otherwise invalid. So I'm wondering if you can reflect internally, and how many of you are in that condition now? Have you gotten to that point of being, blind, dumb, deaf, mad, and otherwise invalid? Anybody here reach that stage yet? Okay, so.
You mean spiritual?
Well, of course. That's it. But we're no longer seeing, any beauty in sense objects. We're only seeing the beauty of Krishna. And we're dumb because we don't want to hear anything except Krishna Katha. We only want to hear about his glories. And we're dumb. We don't want to speak. Okay, dumb means you don't talk. Okay, so that's, you don't want to speak anything about anything other than Krishna. You don't want to hear anything about Krishna. You're mad. How is that used? Mad, I guess that's just the ecstasy, of Krishna consciousness. And otherwise, invalid. You don't want to do anything material anymore. So, this is actually what Krishna came to the world to do. Big thief. He took everything away from everybody. And, but I think if we individually reflect, many of us, we can still see. We're not fully blind yet. We're not fully dumb. We're not deaf. We're not mad. Maybe to some extent we are, but we may have a ways to go. So what I'm wondering, this is what, when I was reading this, I was saying, well, what do I have to do to become blind? What kind of thinking? Just like Krishna had his thinking. So he's a person, I'm a person. What do I need to do to have Krishna to steal all this from me? What kind of thinking should be going on inside of me? What kind of feelings? So, anybody want to preempt the rest of the class by giving me a synopsis of what kind of thinking should be there? What kind of feeling should be there? Going to start over again so everyone can hear?
In Jagannath Puri, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he initiated a lawyer, so he calls advocate. And so he gave a class and said, where is the advocate disciple? He said, where has he gone?
Oh.
He went to have darshan of Jagannath. So Bhakti Siddhanta Thakur says, oh, he went for eye exercise. Then he gave that how actually one become, one see the Lord. He said, as one hears from the lips of a pure devotee, then the real eye of the soul will open, and through the word of Guru, he will be able to see. And I was thinking, Prabhupada made it such a perfect that we sing the Govindam Adi Purusham, which has a full description of how to see and how the Lord reveals. It says, Panti Kalayanti, he manifests. Kalayanti means manifest. He's manifesting by his own sweet will, so we are being seen. Not that I'm seeing it, but we are being seen. Prabhupada made it very, I think, the best combination of the deity.
Okay. So that was those are excellent points, but it was it didn't really fully address the question because you had your shot. Okay, now it's my turn. What I was inquiring about. Okay, so we know from what you're saying that you know there's an enormous amount of mercy that's coming down through Parampalam, and that allows us to see and appreciate the beauty of the Lord. My question was, and still is, what is it that we have to be thinking? What do we have to be doing? What do we have to be feeling? What kind of attitudes do we have in order to be able to properly receive this? Because that's the question. Now I'm going to start answering it. I know Madan Mohan, he has all the answers.
But in that lecture, he said that the same people were reacting in such a way under the direction of Guru. That Krishna will reveal. And he
okay,
will
but what we're trying to answer him, what is that way? What is the way that we're supposed to act? Okay? So, okay. This is a short, I mean, I got 10 minutes to shoot it all out here because it was a really long purport. So, anyway, that started the ball rolling. I think one of my favorite references is in the preface of the Nectar of Instruction, where Prabhupada, he says that advancement in Krishna consciousness depends upon the attitude of the follower. Okay, so now we've got to understand, what is that attitude? What is it? Because this seems to be an important thing. If we're going to advance, if we're going to be able to really be attracted by the beauty of the Lord and concomitantly be repulsed by the so-called beauty of sense objects, then that attitude is an important thing. So let's try and figure out what is that attitude that we need. The Oxford Dictionary describes attitude as a settled way of thinking or feeling. Okay, so settled. I mean, you're there. This is the way you are. You know, it's not you don't change. Okay, so there's a settled way of thinking and feeling. So when Prabhupada says this, you know, that the advancement in Krishna consciousness is dependent upon the attitude of the follower, the next line gives an interesting clue. As to what that attitude should be, and it seems kind of really far out for most of us. He says, a follower of the Krishna consciousness movement should become a perfect Goswami. Well, we've got one Goswami here, but what about the rest of us? So what does actually involve being a perfect Goswami? So there's a lot of depth when we really start exploring this philosophically of maybe trying to introspect, see where our consciousness is currently, and where we got to go in order to have an attitude that really accommodates and accelerates our spiritual advancement. Okay, so why do we have to become a perfect Goswami? Okay, that's a next big question. So there's a very famous verse in shloka, a very famous shloka, at least famous to me. I think you know. I think a lot of devotees are aware of it. In the next chapter of the 11th canto, 37th verse, "Bhayam Dhiti Yabhi Niveshita Shad Ishari Petasha Vipariyo Smriti Tanaya Vito Buddha Abhijetan Bhaktiayaka Yesham Guru Deva Chatma." Fear overcomes the living entity when he misidentifies himself as his body. And this is due to the influence of the illusory energy. Okay, in this bewildered condition, he goes through a role reversal. Rather than seeing himself as Krishna's servant, he becomes Krishna's competitor.
Wow.
That's quite an attitude. Who the heck do you think you are, Krishna? Do you know who I am? I'm tough. You know, I'm the greatest. I remember there was this one boxer, I think he recently passed away from Parkinson's disease, and when he would win a match, he would always win. He'd hold his hands, "I am the greatest! You know, so, I mean, this is the consciousness, you know, that, of the competitor of the Lord, because he's the greatest. Okay, so then what does one do when he's in this situation? We go back to, Prangovinda Prabhu. Then, when he understands this, when he understands his position, and he's gone through this role reversal, then he takes shelter of a bona fide spiritual master and accepts him as his worshipable Lord and Master. And then, in this way, he worships Krishna and starts clearing off all of the, you know, contamination. Because originally, Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema, originally, his constitutional position is that, you know, completely in love and attracted to Krishna. So there's a lot in that purport, and I'll get to that a little bit later. But there's also, from the Adi Leela, chapter 4, there's a really nice verse that kind of sums things up in a very nice way. Atmendriya Priti Vancha Tari Bali Kama. Okay, so when one desires to satisfy his own senses, that's kama, that's lust. Okay, so there's a lot that kind of can be expanded from that. And what does that lust do for us? Other than getting us to a lot of trouble and create a lot of suffering. But from the standpoint of appreciating Krishna and his beauty, Prahlada Maharaj says, Matirna Krishna Parata Satova Itopi Padita Vihagatanam Adanta Gobe Vishitam Tamishram Puna Punas Chavita Chavananam. So, because of their uncontrolled senses, persons who are addicted to materialistic living, engage in sense gratification and make progress towards hellish conditions. You know, such persons, they can't understand Krishna by their own endeavors, by the instructions of others, or by a combination of both. They're just simply chewing the truth. They just can't go anywhere. So, okay, the perfect Goswami starts to make more sense. Okay, so then, in the purporting of this 11.2.37, which describes this role reversal, rather than being Krishna's service, we become one Krishna's competitor, Gopi Prandhan Prabhu is, I believe he's doing this section. Yeah, as a matter of fact, I know he's doing the next chapter, so I think he's doing this one too. I talked to him about the second chapter. But he quotes heavily from Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur's commentaries. So, of course, when we develop this independent, you know, competitive mood, then we come into the material world. And we become covered by the Bahiranga Shakti. This is the external energy of the Lord. We're Tatashta Shakti. We're Jiva. We can go either way. We can be covered by the Bahiranga Shakti, or we can be enlightened by the Antaranga Shakti and the internal energy. It's like Prabhupada gives the example of the shoreline. He was on a walk in Pacific Beach in L.A. And as he was walking, he said, this is the Tatashta, the shoreline. The wave comes in, waves come in and cover, and then they go back and uncover. So this is the potential of the jiva. You can be covered or it can be free from that covering. So, and you know, it's actually the chit shakti that allows us, this, or the antaranga shakti, they're used interchangeably, that allows us to actually appreciate and become attracted to the Lord. Okay, so then, so this is what Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur says, is that the Bahiranga Shakti covers all trace of the Chit Shakti. It's covered, you know, this ability. And as further punishment, the living entity who has given up his loving relationship with Krishna loses all power to receive the eternal, perceive the eternal blissful form of the Supreme Lord, which is his actual shelter. Instead, he becomes attracted to the phantasmagoria of the temporary sense objects. Okay, so that's the status, you know, that at least we were in before we came to Krishna consciousness, maybe to some extent still are. And we're hoping, you know, to get to that point where we're blind, dumb, deaf, mad, and invalid. Okay, we're waiting for that time. And of course, now this depends upon our attitude. If our attitude is proper, we can go very quickly. We can uncover and enter deeply into the Antaranga Shakti. So I quoted this one verse about lust. So then the second line in that verse is Krishnendriya Piti, Icha, Dare, Dare Prema Nama. Okay, so when we're desiring to please the senses of Krishna, then this is love, this is prema. Okay, so important, you know, point there. We heard in the purport earlier on that if one can understand that his real happiness lies in giving pleasure to Krishna, where Krishna takes such a fortunate living entity back to his own abode, which is called Goloka Vrindavan. So this is a key element of attitude. You know, again, attitude means settled thinking and feeling. In other words, we're there. We don't flip-flop back and forth. This is where we've got to be in order to have it called an attitude. All right, so then, just again to kind of support, you know, the need to have this attitude. Vishaya charya kabe shudahabe mana kabe hama hirabo shri Vrindavan. When my mind is completely purified, being freed from material anxieties and desires, then I shall be able to understand Vrindavan and the conjugal love of Radha and Krishna, and then my spiritual life will be successful. That's Narottam Das Thakur and Pratana, Song 1, Lala Shamayi. So how do we get there? Like Prem Govinda gave us a clue, you know, he takes shelter of the Guru. So that's an important element. And I think there's also, it also is required that we recognize, you know, just like there's the 10th canto, I think it's the second chapter. Yeah, second chapter, 32nd verse. Ye nye ravandaksha vimukti maninas tvayashtad bhavaravashuddha buddhaya aruya krachena parampadam tata padantado nadita yushmad angriya. So some people, they imagine, you know, the impersonalist, he imagines that he's liberated. He does all these austerities, all these penances, and it comes to this platform. But because he fails to be attracted, to be attached to the lotus feet of the Lord, patantyada nadita yushmad angriya, he falls down from his imagined position of liberation. So we can't do it on our own. You know, it's not by the brute strength, like the you know, the gyanis or the yogis. They try to do it by, you know, manipulating the material energy by their own austerities. But that's not really how it all works. Because one becomes artificially situated in liberation. And it doesn't really gain an understanding of Krishna in that position. So there's another way. And anybody know Bhagavad Gita 7:14? This gives a little clue. Don't blurt it out. Okay, anybody know? Raise your hand if you know. 7:14 begins with Daiva? Daivi? Daivi? Okay. Daivi yesha guna mahi mama maya duratyaya. Very difficult. Duratyaya. Very difficult to overcome. But if mam eva ye prapadyante mayamitam tarantite, if you surrender unto me, then you can easily cross beyond it. So it's a, you know, there's a whole science that Prabhupada Rupa Goswami has given us but to actually how to arrange our lives, arrange our activities in such a way that we can cross over this ocean of material existence. It's just like there's an example that, okay, so we have this daivyesha gunamayin, this covering of the three modes of material nature. Very, very difficult. Can't get out of it. Stuck. Just tied up in knots. So there's an example that Prabhupada gives is just like there's clouds in the sky. We can't get rid of them. You know, we just can't, you know, can't get a wind machine up and blow the clouds away. But the sun, you know, who created the clouds in the first place by evaporating water, it can very quickly dissipate the clouds just by its blazing rays. So this is, it's Krishna that can do this. So this attitude of dependence and taking shelter, you know, is an important part of the mood, of the attitude of a Vaishnava. And actually, you know, the process of devotional service, of how we can become blind, dumb, deaf, mad, and invalid. You know, in other words, how we can really become free from the influence of the material energy and free from the attraction, sense objects. It's delineated in both Bhakti-rasamrita Sindhu and Upadeshamrita. But in Upadeshamrita, Rupa Goswami is focusing on the attitude or the mindset that's really required to get there. That's his focus. And, so accepting a bona fide spiritual master, that's a big part of the whole process. That's the main point. But then there's a lot of details that Rupa Goswami makes in Upadeshamrita. Okay, so we've got this Vachovegam, Manasokrodavegam, Jivavegam, Uraprastavegam, Etan Vegan Yo Vishahetadira, Sarvam Apimam Pitivam Sushushat. So we got these six powerful passions. We got this, we got the Vacho, the mouth, the tongue, speaking words, we got the mind, we got the tongue desiring, to eat voraciously. We've got tongue, belly, genitals, all these pushings that drive people mad. Okay, so then he goes into a description. These are, for the beginning devotee, they're heavy pushings. And they create tendencies or behavior patterns that are very counterproductive to the attitude that's required to make spiritual advancements. So then, in the second verse, Rupa Goswami tells us what not to do, because there's so much passion that we're stuck with these pushings. And so the Atyahara Prayashascha Pajalpa Niyamagraha Jana Sangascha Lalyamcha Sadbir Bhakti Avinashati. So collecting more, eating more than necessary, collecting more funds, over-endeavoring for mundane things that are difficult to achieve, talking unnecessarily about mundane subject matters, practicing the scriptural rules and regulations only for the sake of following and not for the sake of spiritual advancement, or rejecting regulations of scripture, working independently, associating with worldly-minded people, not interested in Krishna consciousness, and being greedy for mundane achievements. Okay, so there's a whole list, and then we'll go on. There's the next things that we should do. But how to balance all of this? And how to, if we recognize the need for a proper attitude, and then we can disconnect. You see, I'm not the controller. I'm Krishna's servant. Okay, so people are starting to walk out. So I'm thinking it's time to stop here and ask if there are any questions or comments. And I have questions or comments. I'll keep going, but maybe we have some questions or comments or reflections. Nothing? One thing is that on the platform, when one comes to the platform of Bhava, there's this Sudha Satra descends in a very powerful way. It's already there to some extent. You know, and that's comprised of the Lodini Shakti and the Samvit Shakti. The Samvit Shakti gives us the capacity to really recognize who Krishna is, to understand him. And the Lodini Shakti gives us the capacity to enter into a loving relationship. So even in our preliminary stage, you know, the sadhana stage, you know, it begins to awaken. And if we have the right attitudes of humility and dependence upon Krishna and a service attitude, the service attitude's very, very important for it to awaken, you know, for these realizations to come. Okay. So, kind of out of time. Are there any comments or questions? Yes, please.
When you were talking about those last two things, the Samvit and the Lodini Shakti, it kind of reminded me of Yamunadevi would always talk about Krishna magic. So, in every day, we can see how, you know, things just work out, you know, just like things just happen, like how I didn't plan that. So then we can really appreciate, you know, that's knowledge and the pleasure of seeing Krishna, how Krishna is doing everything to help the devotees. It's really a nice thing to remember Krishna by.
And it's very, very nourishing for us to actually perceive how Krishna's hand is in our life. And part of the Krishna magic is that once one begins the process of devotional service, actually no longer under the laws of karma. Actually, Krishna is personally entering in, making the arrangements. It may parallel, you know, what Krishna arranges in our life may parallel what our karmic trajectory would be to some extent if we hadn't taken up devotional service, because what is it's karma doing? It's trying to exhaust our desire to, you know, enjoy separately from the Lord. That's what karma does for us. Anyway, good point. Yes, Prabhu?
To continue in that same line of thinking, there's that verse, Satatenu Kampam, that kind of transitions karma into devotion by offering respects. In other words, that Krishna, this didn't work out the way I thought it should work out, which does that, I don't know if that ever happens to you, but it happens to everybody. So if it's not karma, then Bhoktaram Jagatapasam, this is your best friend arranging, knowing what is good, what is not good for you. We don't know what's good for ourselves, so we ask for all kinds of things that aren't good, that would just give us another body. And he arranges for things that maybe hurt us at the time. But when we see that this Krishna protected me by making things work out wrong. So the Taitnu Kampam verse is that you keep offering obeisances, so because the obeisances are becoming more sincere and hard, you're connecting more, that you're seeing this is actually Krishna doing this, and he's doing it as my friend. So that change is no longer being perceived, because karma, it really doesn't work. When people say it's your karma, you just usually, you know, doesn't invoke what we want. We want the heart to change.
Are you trying to put all the astrologers out of business today with these statements? You look back at your 45 plus years of devotional service, and you can see that those tough times were actually very beneficial.
Just yesterday. I don't have to go very far. It's happening all the time.
Every single moment. Day you get it.
I mean, everything is happening perfectly, but we're mentally concocting this is good, this is bad.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Tolerating suffering.
And waiting for the causeless mercy. That's number one.
Right.
I break down Prabhupada's translation just for me to understand. He said, those who are earnestly awaiting for the causeless mercy while tolerating the suffering of my own misdeed, So that means I'm taking full responsibility on my own and thanking Krishna that he's actually minimizing what I supposed to suffer more than what I destined. Then he says the third, then comes third line that I'm bowing down with my word. Means I have to glorify and be grateful with the word and with my body and with my mind. Then I'm eligible to be. But back to your nice point you made, it was very nice that because Prabhupada put a question in his purport in two places, Madhulila 6.160 also in 7, Madhulila 7.109, he says, so the devotees are, when we say Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu delivered thousands of people, when we say the devotees are traveling all over the world, I guess he was talking about himself, I don't know where else he was traveling, and delivering thousands of people. What does that mean? He put that question and then he answered in the purport. He said that means they are getting the cognition potency and pleasure potency. This is what boils down to. I love that, the way Prabhupada put it. When we get delivered means, I must come in contact with that pure devotee who is a representative of Krishna. For my delivery, he has come all the way and I submit to him. Then he actually bestow by my sincere endeavor to please him that he has come to collect. That cognition potency means binding myself to my original constitutional position as a servant. Then the nourishment will come, which is the pleasure potency.
Right in the very beginning of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna mentions Marta Sparsa says, you have to learn to tolerate. And the next verse he says, if you do learn how to tolerate, then you'll be liberated, just like the Thayabak. You'll be liberated. The same point is there. And that's a stage of madness, that you're saying, this person is suffering like anything and he's still happy. We see people that are dying and they're happy, devotees. And he must be mad. How can anybody be, for a materialist? Who's crazy?
Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna.